Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest OIES podcast. This one is being brought to you by the GAS programme. My name is James Henderson. I'm head of GAS research, and with me today are my colleagues Mike Fullwood and Jack Sharples, and we're going to be talking about the latest GAS quarterly, which came out a week or so ago from the 21st of July at 10 o'clock in the morning, which is when we are recording this podcast. So, gentlemen, welcome back to the OIS podcast.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay, Mike, let me come to you first, and let's set the scene a bit. What are prices at the moment, and what have we been seeing in the last sort of 3 months since we last published a quarterly?
Yeah, I mean, through June and early July, prices have been sort of up and down, a bit bouncing around in dollars. I mean, in BTU, about the sort of $10 level. They're now sort of around about sort of $9, just below $10 on a sort of the latest quote for the month ahead basis. We did for the month of June, in terms of TTF, go below our sort of notional benchmark of $10 a million BTU slightly, which would have been, people would have been shocked if that had happened, sort of looking 6 months ahead. They did sort of come back up a little bit through June, looking at the July quotes, and that was a little bit higher. But then we've seen them dip down again, into the $8 sort of level. And in terms of Asian prices, they've sort of followed the TTF pattern. It's slightly higher than Asian prices. A lot of that, I think, is to do with the possibly slightly lower LNG receipts through June into Europe. And then also, we had some windy days, a few sunny days, and now prices have sort of gone back up a little bit as this heat wave has coincided with sort of lowish wind. So the sort of bouncing along or running along sort of around the $8 to $10 range. And I think we'll talk a little bit later about what they might happen for the sort of the rest of the year. But as we said, Asian prices really been sort of tracking TTF slightly higher, slightly lower for the last 3 months.
So essentially what you're saying is that actually the power sector is the one that's been driving the gas price. I mean, if wind and solar are available, then gas isn't used. But if they're not available, gas is the backup fuel.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, power demand has actually been down quite a bit this year for gas, which is one of the reasons why we've seen European demand down. But some of that's to do with lower electricity demand. But yes, when the wind isn't there, the sun's shining a lot at the moment. The wind isn't there. Basically, gas demand picks up as it's done in the UK last week.
Okay, well that's an interesting. As you said, we'll come back to a couple of those issues later in the podcast. Jack, let me come to you. One of the things we've been monitoring, of course, consistently is Russian pipeline flows. But also in the quarterly, you pick out one other major flow factor that's affected prices. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about Russia first, and then we'll come to the second issue after that.
What seems to be the positive, I suppose, regarding Russian flows is that in general terms, no news is good news. We've been really rather stable now for several months, kicking around the corridor of 60 to 75, maybe pushing 80 million cubic meters per day, pretty well evenly split in the delivery routes between Ukraine and the Turkish Stream pipeline. The only blip really was several days of maintenance between the 5th and the 11th of June on the Turkish Stream pipeline, but that was planned and expected, so no great surprise. And it looks like we're going to continue sort of on that basis. Those Russian flows are determined by long-term contract offtake. Gazprom isn't selling spot into the European market anymore. And actually, as we speak now in mid-July, we've hit a bit of a landmark, really, in the sense that over the past year, obviously, we've seen this year-on-year decline in Russian pipeline supply to Europe, now coinciding with the fact that mid-July last year was maintenance on Nord Stream when it was first taken off entirely. We actually hit a point where year-on-year receipts from Russia were pretty much equal to what they were this time 12 months ago. Obviously, that's going to shift a little bit, given that last year, obviously, Nord Stream came back on briefly for several weeks. But looking further ahead, I think by the time we get to the 1st of September, if we continue receiving Russian gas as we are doing, we're going to be at pretty much the same level year on year as to where we were last year.
Okay, interesting. And I guess, yeah, time marches on and these things, the statistical factors sort of start to kick in. So that's interesting. Now, let's talk about the other anomaly, Norway. Norway's obviously been pushing gas into Europe as much as it can. But at some point, I guess maintenance had to kick in. And what you highlight in the quarterly is that that happened in June. So talk us through what the situation was with Norway and what the impact was on the market.
So last year, the Norwegians really pushed their pipeline supply to Europe. They not only delayed maintenance, but they prioritised the extraction and export of gas rather than reinjecting it for enhanced oil recovery. And clearly the prevailing prices gave them every commercial incentive to do so. But as you rightly say, it did mean that some of the maintenance was going to stack up and need to be done this summer. And that's precisely what we've seen. We've seen it in two waves in the second quarter, really. The first notable impact, I would say, was the Nyhamna gas processing facility being taken offline for an extended maintenance, which then subsequently was extended further than planned. And TTF did react to that announcement by Shell by jumping a couple of euros per megawatt hour upon finding out that the supply from Nyhamna was going to be curtailed for longer than immediately thought. Now, that feeds into the Langeled pipeline to the UK. So that's where we first saw that really start to have an impact. But more broadly, other maintenance has also had an impact on Norwegian flows to continental Europe. So clearly we are down notably year on year. Some of that maintenance has now finished, notably at Nyhamna, but it doesn't mean that we're going to be now at this level for the rest of summer. There is more maintenance planned, particularly for the second half of August and into early September, for example, at the Kollsnes gas processing plant. So I wouldn't expect Norwegian supplies to come back to what we might call their stable high plateau until really late September, perhaps the beginning of October.
Okay, I mean, interesting to note that as you pointed out in the quarterly, that sort of slightly sharper decline in Norwegian output due to maintenance did cause quite a significant price impact for a short period of time, just sort of underlining the tightness of the market. But Mike, let me come to you. I mean, obviously, the other major supply question we look at in the quarterly is global LNG supply. What's the situation there? How are things looking relative to last year and also relative to our expectations at the start of the year?
We did have quite strong expectations of sort of growth in global energy supply for the year as a whole of between 25 and sort of 30 BCM. That's been sort of tempered back a little bit. We've had one or two extended maintenance periods. The Sakhalin project's announced it's going down for extended two months maintenance, and that's a weak feed gas from Nigeria. So we're now looking at slightly lower growth energy supply. So currently, measured when it's actually delivered to the import terminals, we're up just about 6 BCM year on year, but that's sort of below initial target by about 5 BCM. So it's, Norway's higher year on year, obviously, because Hammerfest is now back up fully and running. Algeria's a bit higher as we're the diverted flows a little bit away from sort of pipeline flows. And Mozambique, Coral FLNG is now sort of running at about 60% of capacity, not quite at full capacity yet. And Indonesia is also producing more, but essentially sending it to itself, so from the eastern side to the western side. What we are seeing, however, looking at cargoes leaving export plants, July is looking a very strong month for cargoes leaving export plants so far. And already for the 6 months to June, the amount of LNG leaving export plants was higher than the amount actually being sort of delivered. So there is sort of a lag there. So we would expect this LNG, presumably cruising somewhere, to turn up at somebody's shores, possibly European shores or Asian shores if that picks up. So I think we are looking for supply to be possibly year on year higher by about 20 billion cubic metres, which is sort of 4% or so. So we're not, absent any unknown outages in the plants.
So with this LNG kind of floating around, as you say, having been pushed out by producers, is there a risk of that softening prices significantly in the next couple of months?
Well, I think that's it. I think there's a race going on, and Jack and I will talk about storage. There's a race going on between when will European storage fill and when will the heating season start. Because if the LNG continues to come into Europe, Europe was down a little bit in June, but it's still coming at a fair old rate. then when storage fills, that LNG still starts to come to Europe or goes elsewhere, it's got to find a home somewhere. Then we could see prices dip, you know, even well below the current $8 to $9 level. But if it's storage hasn't filled by the time the heating season starts, then you'd expect prices to sort of be maintained around current levels. I mean, we obviously, coming into the winter, we're looking at the forward curve for prices up at $15, $16 a million BTU. So that looks like a reasonable target with a, in inverted commas, a normal winter.
Okay, I mean the other thing we look at in the quarterly, of course, is Asian LNG demand. It's interesting that this LNG is not finding a home in Asia specifically, because historically that's been the premium market. I mean, what's going on with Asian demand? Can you break it down for us?
Yeah, I mean, again, we're sort of tracking Asian demand, and we were looking for an increase of between sort of 10 to 15 BCM year on year. That was our sort of target. And in the first 6 months, Asian demand has only now just got back to the same level cumulatively it was in 2022. So we're sort of well behind our target curve. Some of that was to do with China, really, in the first 4 months being flattish. But in May and June, and looking at preliminary data for July, China is now beginning to sort of roar ahead. So looking at the China data, sort of what we call apparent gas demand is up about 11 BCM, 6% year on year. You know, obviously 2022 was down slightly on the previous boom year. Production's up similar amount, 6% in China. Pipe imports actually been pretty weak. There's been a little bit of growth. Although the data's not broken down, it does look as though Russia pipe imports on par Siberia 1 have been rising, which the implication is that imports of Central Asia and possibly Myanmar are probably down slightly year on year. The LNG imports are up about 3 BCM. And, you know, we're probably looking at China actually potentially adding about 10 BCM year on year LNG imports, which would soak up most of the expected rise in Asia. In terms of the rest of Asia, the strong growth, and this has been strong for sort of 18, 24 months, has been the month-by-month increase in Southeast Asia, particularly driven by Indonesia, in effect sending LNG to itself, Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore's also up a bit. So that is very, very strong growth there, and that looks like to continue. And now the Philippines and the Vietnam had a commissioning cargo a week or two ago. They've sort of joined the party, and also Hong Kong did in last month as well. So there's a few more Asian buyers coming into the market, which will support this sort of Asian demand. But the very, very weak spot has been Japan. That's down significantly year on year. Korea, Taiwan are not that much. Korea was very strong in February, but since then has been quite weak. So Japan, Korea, Taiwan have really been offsetting the growth in China and Southeast Asia.
And so, I mean, as you say, cumulatively, looking at the graph in the quarterly, I mean, we're now back in June to 2022 levels on a cumulative basis. Do you expect the rebound in China and Southeast Asia now to get us back on target by the end of the year, or do you think we're going to be below expectation throughout the rest of the year?
I think we'll probably end up being below target by the time we get to the end of the year. But see, I think the gap will probably narrow if the recent China LNG imports are sort of maintained and Southeast Asia continues to grow. Japan has got very weak, but it may not go down much further. So, and then Bangladesh has sort of been stepping back into the spot market, and India, Pakistan have sort of been bumping along. But they are trying to come back into the spot market. Pakistan without too much success. I don't think we'll get to the target, but we could get quite close to it. It all really, as is usual, depends on China, which is looking quite strong at the moment.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Jack, let's move to Europe now. And there's a really interesting graph in the quarterly on implied consumption, where you basically use the supply data, less net storage, to essentially work out what gas consumption was in Europe. The decline is pretty consistent, as you point out, and it seems to be sustained into 2023, which is a pretty interesting outcome. Do you want to talk us through some of the data and what the trends are?
So I think you're absolutely right. to point out that the decline has been pretty consistent. So in January, the decline was stronger year on year. In February, it was lesser. But from March onwards, we've seen about a 15% decline year on year. And that's through March, April, May and June, and seems to be continuing into July as well. Now, that would suggest to me that this is not just the benefit of a mild winter, but this is something perhaps a little more structural. And Mike hinted at this earlier, that, you know, gas for power generation, if you've got lower electricity demand, you've also got pretty reasonable performance from both hydro and non-hydro renewables, because obviously we've had, you know, sort of more rain at the start of this year than we had at the start of last year. And then you've got as well the return of the French nuclear fleet, sort of piece by piece. So I can understand how that would be weighing on demand for gas in power. For gas in industry, obviously last year really depressed industrial gas demand through the high prices. And although those high prices have eased, I think, again, Mike's, you know, mentioned looking further along the curve into winter, that you're looking at a rise from sort of $8 to $10 per MMBTU up to potentially $15, $16, and that's in the context of a normal winter, given that there is, I would say, potential, if we see, as Mike says, you know, either a supply interruption or a colder winter, those prices could rise more rapidly. So if you're an industrial consumer, there's not a great deal of visibility along the forward curve, let's say. So I think that might be also weighing on industrial demand. So it does seem to be a little more structural rather than just gas demand for space heating. But I think something else to remember is that even in a mild winter, and even with prices coming back down again, you've still got the impact of changing consumer behavior, particularly if you're a consumer, household consumer that's protected by a price cap, then you're not, you know, although you weren't exposed to the full extent of the rise in prices last year, it does mean that you won't feel the full benefit of prices coming back down again. So it does sort of influence that consumer behavior. So it does seem that we're on a pretty fixed trajectory for the very near-term future.
Yeah, no, it certainly is interesting that the demand decline has continued into 2023. And as you say, now it looks like it's gone beyond just a warm winter into something more structural. So it'd be fascinating to see what happens through the rest of the year. I mean, this picture around demand being lower than expected in Asia, demand continuing to be lower in Europe, and the mention of, you know, supply of a couple of small interruptions in Norway, but supply being pretty consistent, there being LNG still pouring into Europe. I'm guessing this must be pretty good news for stocks, Jack. I mean, your favourite topic. Where are we with storage in Europe at the moment? And you've raised the risk of it being full at some point. Where are we on that trajectory?
So the latest data in the last 48 hours suggests that we're at about 87 BCM of stocks, so which means we're you know, sort of 82-83% full. So that's about 20 BCM higher year on year, and that's where we are in mid-July. We were also 20 BCM higher year on year at the end of June as well, at the end of the second quarter. So that has been maintained. Now, in the quarterly, I pointed out that storage net injections were a bit slower year on year in both May and June. But given that we are so far ahead of where we were this time last year in terms of stock holding, that even if we see net injections through the rest of July and into August being slower year on year, there is still very much the possibility that storage could wind up being full by early to mid-September. Now, that's clearly going to have a softening impact on prices, precisely as Mike said, and as you've just raised in your question, that if you've got supply continuing to pour into Europe and demand not able to absorb it, then that's going to have a pretty negative impact on very near-term prices. But I think what's really fascinating at the moment about the European market is that there is this potential for prices to fall quite significantly in the late part of summer and early autumn, as we seem to be sort of oversupplied and nowhere to put it in terms of storage. But that situation could reverse very quickly if temperatures get rather cold, not just here, but in Northeast Asia come midwinter.
Okay, I mean, look, the last time this happened, I'm looking at the graph in the quarterly, the last time this happened and storage was this full was in 2019-20. And at that point, you know, obviously pre-war, Ukraine offered its storage facilities to Europe to kind of provide an extra buffer, if you like, for all this extra super supply we had. I think you, in the quarterly, you raised this option again. I think the Ukrainians have mentioned it. Obviously, we're in a very different risk situation. What's the likelihood of Ukrainian storage being used to take extra supply?
The Ukrainian system is there and available. Their national gas storage capacity is about 31 BCM, the vast majority of which is located in western Ukraine, not too far from the West Ukrainian city of Lviv. The Ukrainian TSO and their storage operator have both mentioned that they reckon about 10 BCM of storage capacity might be made available to European market participants. Now, back in 2020, they rolled out what they call their customs warehouse scheme, where you can import gas into Ukraine, not pay any customs duty on it, put it in storage, leave it there for 3 years, and then at any point in that period decide whether you want to either re-export it and not pay any customs duty on it, or pay the customs duty and sell it into the Ukrainian market. Now, what we saw in 2020 is that when gas was put into Ukrainian storage, most of it stayed in Ukraine, that the customs duty was paid on it and it was sold into the Ukrainian market, simply because the cross-border entry-exit capacity charges made it uncompetitive relative to gas that had been held in storage elsewhere in Central Europe, so Czech Republic, Slovakia, Austria. But of course, that was a very different market. That was a very loose market. Now things could look a bit different. My expectation would be that for the most part, we won't see substantial injections into Ukrainian storage until EU-based storage is pretty well full. But then you could see, you know, if, as has been raised earlier in the conversation here, that storage gets full well before the start of the winter heating season here in Europe, then Ukraine offers a bit of an overflow. But I wouldn't expect substantial volumes to be injected into Ukrainian storage before EU storage is largely full, precisely because of the risk factors that you mentioned. I'm aware that the European Commission has been sort of lobbying European banks to provide insurance coverage for any gas that is injected into Ukrainian storage. But I think that really just sort of highlights the risk element that that is faced here.
Okay, well, it's a fascinating option, and again, one we'll have to follow over the next few months as the European storage fills up. Mike, let me come back to you for a final word then. I mean, look, we've touched on this potential anomaly in the European market of, you know, the possibility of very low prices in the short term, but a sharp rebound if there's a cold winter. Can you just expand on that a little bit and sort of say what your expectation is for the next 6 months, you know, with reasonable assumptions?
I think storage at some stage is likely to be very close to full, as Jack has talked about, and obviously the timing of that, how much that gets into the cold winter season, you know, it could be a few weeks here or there. I think with storage being full, in the absence of any sort of supply disruptions, either from Russia or energy outages, then we're looking pretty well stocked. Europe looking okay for this winter, even with a sort of cold winter, because we can rely on storage to supply the higher demand in the context of a cold winter. But then the problem becomes, if we deplete storage much more rapidly, is what we do next year. And we sort of kicked this can down the street last year, and the can is now looking very dented. It sort of get kicked again. So you really look into 2024, and we are looking at a reasonable increase in LNG supply. We've got the Greater Tortue project, Senegal Mauritania, coming on probably beginning of next year. Arctic 2 train 1, and you've potentially got Golden Pass, the big one in the US later in the year, and sort of one or two more. So we do have some increase in LNG, new energy export capacity, and then ramp ups from this year. But again, we will come back to the point about Asian demand. And if China is beginning to stir itself, then despite the fact we may have a bigger increase in LNG supply next year than this year, Asian demand could be stronger next year than this year. And if at the same time we've had a cold winter and Europe's got to refill storage, the market could look very, very tight in 2024. On the other hand, a mild winter, and we're sort of back to the same situation we've had this year, is that Europe may not need much more LNG next year in that sort of scenario, and the market sort of tight-ish but reasonably balanced.
And, you know, mentioning 2024, I mean, the IEA just come out with their security review, looking out sort of 12 to 18 months. Anything in there that we should focus on?
Well, no, I mean, they've, it's, you know, as you with the IEA, it's a very good job. And I was reading through it. It was remarkable that we don't always agree with the IEA's outlook, but we're almost pretty much in step for 2024 and 2025 with sort of what they're saying. So they're expecting global LNG supply to rise at 24 BCM. I think we may be slightly higher, just depends on the timing of some of the projects coming on. And they're looking for strong Asian demand and Europe not needing much more LNG. So it's that's the sort of scenario. And they're making the same points we've made about the cold winter could cause things to tighten a lot. But the mild winter would save us again, although somebody once said to me this week, you know, fingers crossed is not a great European gas policy.
Indeed. Well, I'm sure the IEA would be mighty relieved to get your endorsement, Mike, for their latest report after your criticisms in the past. But thank you, gentlemen, for your contributions. The Gas Quarterly, which I'd have to say is a very interesting read, is available on our website for download. So if anyone's interested in the detail, and there's also an essay on LNG imports into South America, which highlights the volatility of those over the past few years, mainly around the impact of hydro in the power sector. But again, an interesting read about LNG demand in Argentina, Chile and Brazil, which is also in the quarterly. So please do go and download it. I hope you have enjoyed this podcast. We should be back with another one in a couple of weeks' time, so look out for that. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our original research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.